Just start with your name, I guess, and where you were born and raised.
Well, he always used you as a surname. So you want just a surname?
Sure.
Some of them that knows me real well, they call me Lou, is my nickname. So I could start with that.
Okay.
Is this ready?
Yeah.
Overall. You gotta watch my voice though.
Oh, it's okay, we'll pick it up. You don't have to worry about it.
And my number is 86420. I joined the one of the big Grenadiers with 18 fellows from 91. September the 18th, 8 days after the war.
39.
Yeah. Well, we come in the tent, a bunch of us, and they weren't recruiting. So they said, come back. And the first one we got was the one for Grenadiers on Main Street. Just close to Higgins Avenue, they had their office there. I forget what building it was. That's where we signed up. And then they spelled my name wrong in the papers.
Yeah.
They had me confused with my age and my name and everything in Ottawa.
Were you married when you joined?
No. I was only 21, I think. Around 21, 22 or somewhere around there. I weighed 184 pounds then, solid, but not fat.
Yeah.
And once we enlisted, they took us to the Minto Armories, and then we were billeted out for 3 months. It was a boarding house. It was Thompson. Mrs. Thompson was from our hometown anyway, so I got along there with, and I knew the fellas. Five of us from our hometown was with me, so more or less I was kind of looking after them too.
Yeah.
And after that, after 3 months, we went to Austin Barracks.
Did you get much training there?
We had quite a few drills of training at Winter Armies, and then we got arrested. But I didn't drill at Osborne. They put me as cook. So I was cooking in there until the latter part before I went to Jamaica. Marine. And I guess that was 1940 when we left. I was with A Company. I was supposed to be cooking for them. At first, it was headquarters when I was at Osborne. And I was supposed to be made a sergeant, which I didn't accept. I didn't want the responsibility. It was too much headache, and I didn't want the officers right away. So I stayed there and worked for just about 2 weeks before we left for Bermuda, that I went in the cookhouse and cooked for the government house there, the staff. For my stay there, we had 3 months to stay there, and I enjoyed every bit of it. I hated to leave, and the governor over there, he asked, wrote to Ottawa to keep us there. But 4 times they got a return on every one. I wouldn't mind staying right at the time then, would you know, right? No, we had to go leave and go to Jamaica. We stayed there for 15 months, and you know what it is. I was told you about the most of the things we get there.
Oh,
guard duty and drill and ship guard. And then 1 month up at Newcastle, drilling and what have you. Any work they have, detail for you, you know. In the Army, is everything done by Army rules.
Did you feel pretty well trained by the time you got back to Winnipeg? Sort of
what do you
ready
mean,
for
the drill? That's not actually full-fledged here. As far as drilling is all right.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, a lot of us guys knew how to handle a rifle, even before we joined the Army,
mm-hmm.
by hunting and deer and everything. So that part wasn't hard. But when you come to machine guns, Vector machine guns and brand guns, Lewis guns, and you had to take it apart and put it together again, that was a little tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Supposed to do it in a blindfold or two. which I never got a thing done. But I knew how to handle it. And then come back. I was on the last detail coming back. And they were supposed to have 18 days leave. That's all I got is 8.
And you got notified to report and come back
in the city. They gave me a shot in the arm. Holy God, I don't know what kind of shot it was, but my hand was swollen from there to there. They give me too many cc's, I guess, for once, doing all in one trick. And I got over that and supplied us with our gear again. And first thing we know, we're on the trip. Nobody knew until we were about a day off the boat, Vancouver, you know. And we sailed, and then they told us about 2 days after, I guess, they told us, well, we're going to Hong Kong. We might have to fight our way out the boats. So we're all, you know, you got your details to work, different shifts, guard, land the guns and all that. But nothing happened until we landed to Kowloon. That's the mainland. And we were barracks, I guess the Champchapo, that was our barracks. Well, we were only stationed there for, I guess, about a week, and then I was sent up in the hills in Hong Kong. With C Company, with Jack Bailey's out there. I had to cook for them there. For 2 weeks, and then we come back. And as soon as I come back, we only sent, then the war broke out. And we were all scattered all over the place. I was with my A Company again, and they had me as a runner. Until something got wrong with the cookhouse, and then they took me from runner to the little Hong Kong. That was our headquarters. And I was supposed to cook. So I come there, and I go to bed that night. Next morning, I'm up at about 4 to get the meals ready, you know. It's all little Dixies. High pressure Dixies, you know, you have it heated with water, and then you throw the water out, you put bacon in, and that keeps it nice and warm, and all the rest, and then it was shipped out in baskets, you know. Straw. Sent out different. I had about 21 of these things to do. In the morning, you measure how much work one guy has to do for about 30 men. I get to them waiting for them to come back, and nobody comes back for them. Here they're stuck over one shady gap there. So all that food was there. So that's all, I didn't have to cook anymore. So I went on the Mad Major, we call him. I don't know what his name is. He's from the Middlesex. He was a good man, but called him the Mad Major. He didn't care about his life or nothing. He was brave, you know. He wanted us to guard, George Dunn and I, to guard the pillbox and that on top. It was a big mound, you know. Had trenches all around. And he did that for 60 hours. George Dunn and I went off sleep or eat or anything. Not even a drop of water. Before we got relieved, we went to my major. We said, who's going to relieve us? And there's 34 men sitting up there. He wouldn't come on to relieve us. Mm-hmm. Finally, anyway, we went over and got 6 guys to relieve. Well, us 2 dead. And in the meantime, while we're doing the guard, crunching, Jesus, it was daylight, you know, shelling. Coming over, you could hear it. And I'm standing and looking over there, sideways, this, you know. Here's some noise. Woo, 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 you know. Piece of shrapnel. I just moved in time. Piece of shrapnel come right down about that, about 3 inches long. Now it's sliced out, you know, and about 2 inches wide. And the depth of the shell, you know. Red hot. Just missing. I just lucky I moved. That's what if I was standing, I would have got a right bump into the top of my head. Just like I moved over. Because it's making noise coming down, you know. And I took that and I was saving that for a souvenir, which I never had a chance. So anyway, that was in. I'm trying to catch everything the way it's supposed to go. I'm missing something.
It's okay. If you miss something, you can go back.
First, I was allotted to with the B platoon, you know, an A company, number two platoon. That's 15 men. Had this here saddleback, you know. Saddleback was up and we're down below. And this here nice, swanky place of a Chinese banker. So we had the whole back place to ourselves and they lived in their own quarters. And they had a record player. So my favorite team, when I start the day off, get the boys going, I put this here record on this, Over the Waves. And every night we had our goals, and that night we played that. That was by two to stag. And I looked after the food, and any trucks that come by, we stop anyone on a roadblock, you know. I'd stop and I'd see what they got in the truck. Was that bread or any food? We take it out. Take some, they don't even know what we are. Yeah. We're busy. Somebody busy talking there. I'm in the back taking it. So we get some extra food that way. And this certain day, I was standing there with Jack Williams. Him and I were on a roadblock. Crazy if I didn't hear something zip past us and landed right up against the hill, you know, up the road. Piece of shrapnel like that. Just missing us two. He was like we were side by side. Right between us. So that was another lucky chance we had. That was the only two I had in my problems there. No, I had one other one when this English major, I call him, the hell is he drawing his pay for? He was supposed to be leading the men, not hiding, shrinking away from them. Because that's all false pretenses. He wanted us two Canadians to go and look and guard them so they could go to sleep. We had never slept for 60 hours and we never ate or anything.
Yeah.
So I said, went to Georgia, so let's sneak out. Found a black hole in the wall there. We went to sleep. We didn't eat. We were to sleep right in there. They're looking all over us. They couldn't find us until we had our sleep. But he pointed his gun at us. He wanted us to go out scouting. You got 34 men of yours over there. They're not doing nothing. You just come out and do it. We left them there. We didn't go back to see them at all. We snuck out and got back down to the. So each one had numbers. That's a good number. Yeah, I know. One was down there, one up here, and there's one up there, you know, all close. But each had a little spots where you machine them, nests are hard. Some had buildings, some didn't have, just had trenches. We went back to this house there where I said I was cooking, but I didn't do no more to that. And come back, and I went in the kitchen, scrounged something to get a pound of pita bread and some meat there. And I guess the flies was on it. Doesn't matter when you're hungry. You're hungry, you eat anything. And drank water, whatever. And we went back to the pillbox and we went to sleep. And we heard what the Japs were doing, you know. Shooting hand grenades in the
chimney
holes. So we had that packed. We barred our doors, a steel door, and we had the Middlesex garden outside. And the two of us, we slept through, I guess, about clock round, and we were more. Because we needed that much sleep. We didn't care if Japs come or not, we should have tired. Poof. We went back again after that. We left the pillbox, went up to the little Hong Kong, and back to duty again. And the Mad Major come up. He says, "Geez, there's a hand grenade come from that bush." So we peppered that bush. But I had Lou's gun and a Ben gun. I had the barrel so red hot with peppering and all that. And, you know, I start right from the bottom of where to about 3 feet high, you know, and then I rake it down again. All the way, steady sweep. I got the barrels all bent up like this, 200 buggers away. Because we had lots of them. If the Japs would have come and take them, well, we had to destroy it anyhow. Mm-hmm. I had my Vickers machine gun, that's my baby. I sat there beside it and let her go till she was red hot. Then you throw the pins away and everything, you don't need it. And then we stayed where I write after. We had all kinds of hand grenades. I was loaded with hand grenades all over the place. See something move in the dark, you know, the Japs are smart. They throw flares up. And they could see anyone bobbing around. And they fire Spencer Tracy's at us. George says, "What the hell do that? Throw a hand grenade? I thought I seen somebody move. And that's over the bank, you know. I just tossed it there and we ducked." Dirt was coming all over us, you know. I said, "Well, if there's anyone down there, they're not going to be there now." But that's the way it was, like nearly every day and every night, you know. Then they told us, "Oh, yeah, we've got to fight the last man. They don't take no prisoners." Well, we had that in our mind. We don't know where to go, and well, we'll take as many of them before they take us. It would work right up to December the 25th. That's where I was captured, you know. And they had chickens there. See, they told us while we were surrendered at 10 o'clock in the morning, before the Japs came, it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I had chickens there to cook, and I had these here blower stoves, you know, with a blower. And those Dixie square ones hold about 18 gallons. So I cut up all these chickens. We're going to have a Christmas dinner anyway. You think those buggers would help me to clean the stuff or do it? We could have had it before the Japs came. I think the damn thing is still cooking now. Well, sure, because when they come at 3 o'clock, I was just putting the thickening into the juice, you know, for the gravy, for the stew.
And the Japs?
I hear firing out there. Ping, ping. I said, "Who's firing? We're not supposed to fire no more. It's all finished." Mm-hmm. They had a big white sheet in the other part. You see, I was in like the low end. It was a big double building and white one, you know. I had a big white sheet on the window. And all our ammunition, everything was broken, destroyed what we could, what we had around us, so they didn't confiscate nothing. And then Sergeant Major Soden says to me, "You go out first." I said, "What for? You got that damn thing, why don't you go? What the heck did they feed you all these years for being Sergeant Major? Why should I go? I'm Buck Private." He says, "No, you go ahead. It's an order." I didn't listen. "Let's go, George." I went up. And they were all on the road. Like, we had to walk from here, well, twice the distance from this wall to that wall. And you see them bunching them wild animals, like, you know. I said, "Holy crap." So if I seen a machine gun beside there, I think I'd popped and used it on them, you know. Bandits and rifles. And the officer, he was waving his revolver, giving orders, you know. I had some stuff, souvenirs I had in my pocket, like the Bible. They were a nice package size, you know. And had it in here, they took that up, Japs did. tore everything out of what I had, my pockets, everything. And it was nothing. No dress coming along, so they just tied it with wire to each wrist, six lines. And after all that was done, so they marched us to Repulse Bay. Boy, I never seen so many Japs almost as well ever going through all this. And Repulse Bay was a long way, you know. From little Hong Kong, you had to walk all around. And you could see the dead too, with laying on the road and the side of the road with bullets in their head and all over. Japs and ours, you know. We got to Repulse Bay and they tied us back to back in this building. 36 hours we sat there. They gave us one can of milk to drink. Carnation milk was too. I guess they didn't have no food in this house there, so they couldn't give us any. And they took us to a camp, North Point camp I think it was. Yeah, it was North Point camp before we went to Champs-Chapeau. And that was there, I don't know how long, I guess you got that from the other guys, how long we were there. Because they were ahead of us when we got there, because they had us in different places. Before they scouted us across to Kowloon site. And when we got from North Point Camp, that's where those guys escaped before them.
Did you know about that? Did you know there was going to be an escape before it happened?
Oh, yeah. I knew all about it. And a lot of the guys were run down then, you know. Some had this here hot foot. And they were dying in North Point Camp, too. I don't know how many men. I forget how many men we had there. But the meals were very lousy.
Did you cook there, too? Did they get you to cook?
No, I didn't cook there. Not even in Champs-Chapeau. I cooked in... after I went... Well, I don't want to start that yet until we go there. So we got into Champs-Chapeau. They didn't have us room for us then, they had this year. All the regiments that's been there, battalions and all that, with the Portuguese and Hong Kong and vets and all that, you know, from the people living there, as well with the British
and the Canadians.
Yep. It was a big camp. They held quite a bit of people. So they had a little shack, and there's about eight of us. We were sleeping on cement floors for about 3 months. Found a piece of cardboard to lay on the cement. But that didn't help. One blanket. And the meals were pretty lousy there to start until you got to know some of the Portuguese. And then you started to dicker with them. And you get some salt, some other things, you know, what you could give with a little bit.
How did they get it? How did the Portuguese?
From their wives outside.
Oh, I see.
See, the Canton, that's a Portuguese settlement, but they come in, they volunteer in the army. So they were in the camp too, and so that's where we were getting them. Some of the Chinese coolies were bringing stuff in too, smuggling. And they could get some money we had none. But anyway, we managed to salvage some salt and I forget what the heck it was, tea maybe. I think it was tea. To put in our rice, you know. And we had an epidemic of diphtheria there. So I used to go around and shave the guys at the hospital. They had a little go back right at the waterfront of Champs-Chapeau. I used to go around and shave the guys with a straight razor. And this guy was pretty well gone with this diphtheria. Oakes is his name. I brought him some salt and I think it was soy sauce I had. And I told him to use that. But geez, I saved his life. I don't know what happened after that. After that, I was on the first contingent to go to Japan. And our camp was Camp 3D at Yokohama. worked at the shipyard. You were allotted each section. There's six men to each section of a certain part of the factory. So we were swinging this here 50-pound sledgehammers on this metal for the frame for the freighters. You heat the metal and you have a dolly, spread it, and then they pull it back to what the frame has to be like, you know. It's quite a marvelous act, too. And it's an easy way. They showed you how to do it. It's very easy to swing that. And I found an easier way how to break the handles. Just hold it, take it down the whole stiff and snap right off at the thing. And they have to send you to go and get it fixed, see, so you get a little break there. We do that occasionally, two or three times a day, so we get a little break. Mind you, they didn't treat us too bad in that department. That old man there, he was put the three rings around, and one wide one, three small and one wide one. He was the head man there. And if they got any candy rations, he used to give it to us. And he treated us pretty good. And the guy with the split lip, he was good with us. And if I want to lay at work, we'd try to twist wrist, you know. And they even loved that. You could play for hours with them. And me with a long arm, I could twist her. Don't I? And they tried to pull that, trying to get it away, you know. But we worked every day. I guess it was four holidays in a year,
yeah.
All emperor days. Sundays didn't mean nothing. From 7 o'clock till 5. And I weighed 184 when I was in that camp. And I went down to 120.
Couldn't have been eating too well.
You know, so, well, the work was getting on me too. Mm-hmm. So they put me in the cookhouse to cook. To get some of my strength back. So I was cooking in there for the latter part of the war, you know. And things got too hot, and then they moved us to Sendai area, camp number one.
Sendai?
Yeah. That's over at Norton, coal mine. And then they sent me in the cookhouse there. Oh, we had seaweed for vegetable, we had stinkweed, we had moss to cook, we had shark bones, you could smell it come a mile. And I know Chick Quarry, myself, we had to keep steering it, you know, for the stock. And from the home, he passed the night.
From the smell?
Just from the smell, and you only did it for about not quite a minute. It was so powerful. So we had to pull the fire out, and then when it cooled out, you could work it. And I'll take all the bones out and strain all the stuff that out and just use the stuff. And it was so strong and potent, that's why Podwell was one of those big things, you know, around and fire you got. There's no stoves. And we had about eight of them strung around. So this one we kept adding a little bit every day to the soups we were making, you know, to give a little strength. Which it helped. And then they brought some other stuff like, forget the name, maize, I think it was. White, form out of soybean. Matsu, I think it was matsu or something. Yeah, anyway. And then they had the paste of it. It was like yellow. And like peanut butter. But it's made of... They had lots of salt in it, which we liked. And then it was soy sauce. They gave us lots of that. That was in the soup every day. He didn't get none extra. It was all in the soup. And once in a while they give you some meat. You maybe have 10 kilos of meat. 500 men. So you know how much you're going to get meat out of there, you know, out of three soys of soup. Well, we made it out to the potato tops, potatoes, cucumbers, cooked that. We ate it with filling. And this rice, what we had was this Korean rice, it red. Not this real good rice you get here. It's a red one. And if you drink water, that kind of swells up. That's why we drink a lot of water. And that was in Yokohama. But then when we went to Sendai area, we didn't get that kind of stuff. We got a little bit different. They named it different. I guess their dialect is a little bit different again. They call it that. Until World War finished. I stayed there right in the cookhouse. As a matter of fact, we were making bread. They gave us a little bit of flour and we cooked. And then when the war was finished, the Grumlins used to come over. They told us to put signs out in the hills showing where our camp is. And they would put signs out in the hills showing where our camp is. And they were dropping food to us. They found our camp and they were dropping bread and stuff. We were standing in the parade grounds and just watching this coming up. One of them would just pass me. He could have killed me, I guess. But I didn't give a damn. I was getting that bag.
Yeah.
But it was in. And we stopped the train and we got the Japs to go and work for us. Then we brought all that stuff back with the flat cars from the hills and barrels of food. We didn't gobble it down because our stomach was used to that stuff, rich stuff. Couldn't eat it. Same when I came back home. When I married her and she took over the ribbons and boys put me in the shape. Taking the knife three times a day I was eating, that's what I think. For 3 years. But then we had to go back after we left. We were there 2 weeks waiting for to get moved to Yokohama, you see. So we went around to these villages, visiting some of the girls there, and sake and what have you. We had lots of yens. We had no place to spend it. It was all kinds. Some of the guys didn't even go, so they gave me, those of the guys that went, gave us all the money they had. We had a lot of fun up there. Nobody molested us. And then we met this Pitlip there from Yokohama. I don't know what he was doing over there, but he met us there in the crash. He showed us around. We went on a train. We went to some village there, and he showed us the geisha girls and a lot of different places, which was interesting to see. But he's talking in Japanese to us, and we know certain lingo, but not all. And then we come back to camp, and after that we went by trolley all the way to Yokohama, and the Americans took over right away. Here's my stuff, souvenirs I had. Just pile it over there, and they lit a match after it, you know, after we put all our stuff. And they dressed in us in their uniform, American uniform. And needles? Crazy. That's all I had was needles. I was supposed to go home from there. I was detailed to go home in this here battleship Carolina. So I had my bed in there and everything, and they found out I was sick. I had to go back to the mainland, and they flew me all the way to Guam. It took me 8 hours in the plane to go to Guam, and I was 6 weeks in Guam. Give me penicillin shots there. Which I got along after I finished the hospital. I stayed there for a while and they had their canteens of beer. So the guys dressed me up in their marine outfits. I had two outfits. I looked pretty sharp. And I was getting all the beer I wanted. no heights, just there, you know. And all the food, they looked at good. And then we departed from there after 6 weeks into this boat. 34 of us Canadians, and all of us American soldiers, you know, Marines and pilots and all that, was going back. I guess it was about 1,200 on the... I told you the name of that boat, Lemur. Mm-hmm. We got to San Francisco. It took us 3 weeks, I guess, to get home to San Francisco. And they had a big band, everything waiting for us. And this some big shot there, he was a major in San Francisco, and he was supposed to be in charge of us. So he says, you got 10 hours leave in town, and you come right back here. So I said, well, have we got any escorts? Yeah, you got those Navy that was there around here. So the whole 34 of us, we went together. We got they gave us $200, yeah. Go along with it. And then he dressed up for us in Canadian clothes. This stuff here. Of course, we didn't have the fashion on, just a suit. And we went out, we had a hell of a good time. We're drinking and eating. And we wanted to take some bottle on the trip. So I had one here. I was tooting all lined up with booze. And we stand there praying. He says, the major comes over and taps and says, what's this one fellow's right on pavement splashed? He said, you know, you're not supposed to take that one. I said, well, I'm not leaving the country. I'll be going through stage. We all gone before I hit Canada anyway. So he said, okay. He was very good though. And they sent us to some barrack place they had there for a convalescent. So we were there 2 weeks convalescent there. And try to keep us penned in, these guys, you know, and I had 10 of us. I said, let's go. Over the fence were the girls from the canteen. We got talking with them and they picked us up and took us uptown. They were buying us food. We were just going to sit there. Here comes the police sergeants and all that, picked us up. Back in the place you go. And the girls pleaded with them, we pleaded, let's have at least something to eat. Orders, bring them back. We're not supposed to be, they don't know, we figured a disease or something, which we might have had. But all the bloody needles I had, I don't think I ever had any disease. They sure used me as a punch bowl. All those guys, you know. Everywhere you went, every stop, you had to go through the same procedure. I don't know how many I went through. Then we got to Victoria, and we stayed there for a week or two, and then I asked for a week leave in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. My brother-in-law, he was in Winnipeg. So I stayed there a day or two, and it started raining and bothering me. I sent a telegram to Beaver, Saskatchewan, where I'm with. Other brother was there. He met me at the train, but I didn't say I could pull all the way through. I just seen him at the train, because it was a layover about a couple of hours and then you're moving again. So he was there to meet me until I come to Winnipeg. And there's no comparison what the Americans would do for us. They did everything, anywhere you went. You had that uniform and they respected it. And they did everything for you. Coming to Canada, forget it. The war is over. They don't want you. And we had nobody there, not even Red Cross would beat us. Come to Winnipeg, and my family was there. And one from a regiment, you know, to show me where to go to meet my family. That's all. So anyway, they give us kind of a lesson here. Well, of course, we went through this rigmarole about treating more needles every day, and treatment at Deer Lodge. And it comes the time that you have to get discharged. I said, I want another 8 years yet to go, and I could do my full time. And I said, I don't know what the heck I could do now. For being overseas, I had about 11 years in service, you know. Mm-hmm. Time and a half, but you ever want it. So 7.5 years plus that, well, you know, it brings you about 11 years. Another 9, I would have had my pension. I said, I want to finish the going in the Army. He said, no, your health is no good. So I go, dear Lord, and this is your A1. I go, I mean, he says, dear Lord, I'm A1. You say I'm no good. Well, now what the hell gets? That's the way he passed the buck. He's still doing it.
Did you get to stay in the Army?
No, I got discharged. He says I was medical on. Two lads, and they say, nothing wrong with you. That's in the buck. That's, so all right, after a day, 1 year convalescing, I had to go and look for a job. So I start all over. Looking for a job. Were you in the Army, huh? I said, what outfit were you in? Winnipeg Grenadiers. Oh, no thanks. Bad risk. I said, thank you. I said, I got some of that. That's what you get for fighting for them. Thank you. You know what I ended up? Beer with.
No kidding.
That's right.
What was the bad risk all about? Why?
My health.
Oh, I see.
They didn't want to take me. They figured my health was bad. And yet the year lodge says no. But everywhere else, I can't get a insurance nowhere. They won't accept it. And yet they don't accept it over there.
Does the government have insurance that you can get?
I can't even get it out of them. I was staring down there, and I says to them, I says to guys over here at DBA, I said, funny thing, when I had to buy the house, they want you to have insurance. I said, I can't get none. He said, well, you can try some more. I said, same thing, go and be turned flat. I said, I had 3 of them turning me flat already. I said, why I have to go anymore? I said, once they get my keys history, it's finished. He wouldn't touch it. It's a 10-foot pole. Mm-hmm. And then they come to his brother's deal, you know. And I had my brother, Merchant Marines, you know. He was down east, and he went through the test the same time I was over here. He was a 100% A1. Me didn't have no happy. I guess I was Zed. You know. No compression, so they give me 50%. But over here, these doctors don't give you enough. You go and complain, it's A vitaminosis. That covers everything.
Yeah.
You get a sore knee, oh, that's A vitaminosis. You get sore legs, that's been bothering me ever since I come back. That's very, very, you know it's there. I complain it every time I come in. There's nothing we could do for you. I said, yeah, put it in the paper. You could do well by doing that. I said, you know damn well you can't cure it. It's there, it's in the bone. You can't see it, and I can't see it, but I said, I'm a fellow that suffers with it. Now I got to go and work and make a living room. It's easy for you. You make about $50 a day. I make only $10 a month. But the way the pension I was getting at that time. And I said, I can't even get a job in the city. I had to go and beer wait. You know, I did that for 7.5 years until I got in the committee. Well, I did some carpenter work in the summer. Winter time I went back beer wait. And then I got in the commission and I stayed there now until now.
The liquor commission?
Yeah. 1952 when I joined up, signed up, maintenance, and my health was gone. After 10 years, I went into the store for lighter work. Mm-hmm. Tell them over dear life, but they don't pay attention.
So you've sort of had to fight all the way for anything?
Anything I got, I had to fight. I never got nothing. Not even a job.
You mentioned earlier that, that picture, your face is swollen up with beriberi. Did that show up after you were repatriated, or was it like
that? We had it in there. We had black. Oh, yeah, I missed a lot of that. I had all that disease that was there. I guess you got it all from the other guys too. Lager, Bearberry, and it's the thing that I don't want to put it in there. It has to do with your bag, which I had some butter and I used that and it saved me on that because my bag was all chapped, ready to start to fester. So I used a little butter that we got from the Red Cross and put it on there. Cure that. It was salt in there, you know, biting them. And then you have the diphtheria, small touch of it. But with any going disease we had, even in Jamaica, we had this diggery fever, malaria fever. And it's tropical, you know, it's a tropical disease. I think I got names for it. They do my throat and that. I had it in Jamaica. They call it streptococcus. My doctor, I like to see you get a hold of Dr. Crawford, because I want to write to him and tell him about this. They don't seem to want to recognize it here at all. My ears, eyes, and nose, every now and then it goes on me. He's somewhere in Ottawa, and I don't know where he is.
Did you go blind at all?
No, I didn't go blind. My vision is poor, but for close up, I could see, the distance I could see. But close up, and this drug business here, I get this about, eight times a year. I go over there and they give me some stuff to fix it up and see what my ears. And they give me salve for my eyes. My skin is dry, I have to put salve on my skin. And that's ever since I've been discharged, I've been getting this.
And probably all on account of the food.
It's all lack of vitamins, which it is. You know. Yeah. You're not going to build that back. I don't give it. I want it.
Yeah. Did you get any Red Cross parcels? Do you remember getting any Red
Cross
parcels?
Yeah, we got three and a half. Well, we got four. One, we got one complete one. That was in Champ Chapeau. The rest was in Pan. And we got a third. No quarter. And then the fourth one, we had to divvy up in eights, the last two. Eight people to pass. You just got the four, the whole. We were there. Anything else you can ask me? I know there's lots of, but I forget them. You know, there's so many, and you pretty hard to grasp what you're going after.
Going back to Shamship. Oh, I wondered if you ever ran into Kamloops Kid or any of the other Japanese that were notorious for beating people up.
Oh, they were good for not beating up. If one did something, the rest gets beaten up just the same. Like Captain Norris. He had a beriberi and they beat him up because he can't walk. And everybody has to walk, no matter if they crawl there. You had to carry them, they had to get on the praise square. He didn't come out, so they beat him up. And they killed him. Damn fine fellow out there, Captain Norris. I guess you heard some remarks about him. They're all good.
He died after the war.
Yeah, he did. He died. He has that tailor shop right next to, right across from the Army. Navy, thank you. I'm Gary. I think it's Gary, yeah.
Do you remember any of the programs, like the RISO programs they used to put on in Champ Chapeau or in North Point? The little skits they used to, the companies used to put on?
We didn't have none in our camp. It was straight work. Nobody had time to even go and be tired.
Yeah.
They weren't tired to make skits or parties or anything.
Did you make anything there, like cigarette cases or anything like that?
No, because you're working every day from 7 in the morning till 5 at night. When you got a day off, you take it. They don't give you a rest. Yet you got to wash, and you got to keep everything clean. They make sure you're busy every day. We never had no time for recreation there at all. That's all here at Edwards to get to work and back.
Did you get any letters when you were over there? From your folks or anything?
I think I got two. From my mother. Mm-hmm. And I sent about four. But over here, the Ottawa told them I was dead.
So all through the war they thought you were dead?
Yeah.
I
sent a telegram, I'm alive. And they got mixed up with my cousin. He got shot up there, he was a corporal, you know. Got killed on Mount Carmel. Machine gun. He was leading a platoon up. They all got wiped up with shrapnel, the planes come down, you know. But all that shrapnel they have in. It spreads right around and got some of that in the bullets as well from a machine gun nest. Actually, I wasn't here, but this is what I got reports to people that survived some of that.
Do you remember when they put the officers in a different camp or separated the officers from the men?
They did that right at the start.
Was there a reason for that, or did they just...
Yes, they followed the officers. They had respect for the officers. And they didn't. The officers were in one compound, we were in the other. But in Champs-Chapeau, we were... The officers had their quarters, but we were... Our bunks right next to them, so... Of course, we never had much to do with the officers anyway.
Did you think they were a fair lot, or did they get better treatment than you, or?
That I couldn't tell because I left and I don't know what all those officers was left behind.
Yeah.
So I couldn't tell how they fairly well after that.
Did you work on Kaitak when they were building the airport?
Yes, I did.
That started before you?
Well, that's the one place, see, that's, I missed that. Well, I was on that detail. Moving a hill for, trying to level this hill for landing the planes on, you know. We were working like coolies. Two baskets of bamboo stick. Of course, we did a lot of sabotage work there too, you know. Even in the shipyards, we did a lot of that, you know, don't rush things.
Yeah.
We handled it a little bit.
Did you ever have any word from outside as to what was going on with the war?
No rumors. Tali keeps giving us this propaganda, they're winning the war, and that's it.
I guess the first time you knew anything was going on when you saw Yankee
planes? Well, this sergeant of Japanese, he was not bad, had looked at the cookhouse there, and he told us that they surrendered. They used some kind of big bomb. Kill a lot of people. He said it was war. As soon as we heard that, it was a finish right there. We tore down the walls and started walking to town.
Did the Japanese leave?
Nobody had to look after them. One new personnel was there, we put them to work. With us, you know, we did our own cooking. They had to bring the stuff for us because they knew how to get the stuff and we didn't. Until we got our own stuff.
Did you ever get a chance, or where you were, was there any opportunity to steal food or get out of camp and scrounge food in the night?
No. Well, they had high walls there. You couldn't get us. No way you could. They had us too penned in, and we were too tired to go out even to look.
Yeah.
You go in dusk, and you come back at dusk. And that's the way we had to live.
For 3.5 years.
Yeah, 4 years actually. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's all the questions we got. If there's anything else you want to add, you're welcome to.
No, I don't think there's much more. I give up now. I'm trying to worry about it now. I guess it's old age catching up to me. I just thought, what's Why fight it so?
Would you, given the circumstances, I mean, you wouldn't get called again now because you're younger, but would you go back again if there was another war? If you'd have been younger?
Well, I have thoughts on it. Same as what they promised us the world when we went the first time. When we got back, we got promised on it. One guy, I went to DBA and he showed me, he says, there's 1,500 jobs in there. You want to pick it out? He throws a book at me and I take the book and tell him, that there's you paid for that job, to find one for me. I didn't want to mention his name. I know the name. Because I got to live with it yet. But that was it. And I never bothered with it. Asking for a job, I went out looking for it. Well, I was a bartender at Transit Hotel at that time. So I learned washing glasses and then I learned how to balance a tray. And I worked there until after about a month there, and then they put me into the union. And I had to have a badge to serve. And after that, I was shipped on to LaSalle Hotel. Ken White was the manager there. And he looked after me pretty good. And the boys I worked there was all good with me. I ended up with the 6 best waiters in Winnipeg. To make money, the wages were poor. I had to make the hustle to get the dime or whatever they want to tip, you know. But that was a hard work, long hours. Had a smash here from a fight to stop a fight. Shirts torn. Yeah, there was no better roses out there than the first 7.5 years I worked in Beulah.
Do you get a full pension now, or are you still fighting for pension?
Still after more if I could get it. On account of my legs, given, and my hands. Everything seemed to go weaker all the time, so I tell them all that, but they don't seem to pay attention. So maybe after this, I bought them because they worked on it. They might throw another 5%, but big deal.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Thanks very much.